Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
Thank you, Kyle, Little Rock Ledbetter. Welcome back, Cardinal fans. Now, a few days after the NFL Combine, where all kinds of heads were turned, and all sorts of news was generated and rumors, et cetera, et cetera. And it's always an interesting time of the year for NFL fans and fans of your own teams. And yeah, it was interesting with Marvin Harrison Jr. showing up, actually, for interviews and not winding up talking to the media. Kyle, what do you make of that? What do you think happened there?
So,
go ahead.
Fill me in on the details real quick. So I know Marvin Harrison Jr. showed up physically to the combine, announced long before that he wasn't going to participate. Last week on the show, we talked about how because he has the privilege to afford him to do so, he wasn't going to work out on the NFL's time. He was originally stated to answer questions and then didn't end up answering questions from the media. Is that what ended up happening?
Correct. He, I guess, met with 8 or 9 teams. From what I gather, he asked teams if there was anything he needed to show them at a pro day. Because we know it, he has not been inclined to do a pro day either. And then was scheduled to address the media and then was a no-show. So
interesting,
leaving people wondering why. And then word came out he was still interviewing with teams and et cetera. So, but what's fascinating to me, go ahead.
No, I wasn't necessarily reading too far into that. It's just interesting that you're slotted at an allotted time, I presume during the receiver workout days, I presume was when that was happening. So that's just interesting that it became a controversy as such that it did. If he was not going to meet in the first place because he was more focused on meeting with teams, it's strange that they still had his scheduled slot down for meeting with the media.
Right. What's weird is for such a high-profile player to kind of be, you know, kind of come in kind of and stay under the radar and not speak is just mysterious. Now, his dad, Marvin Harrison Sr., was also, he was not a media guy. So he was reticent and was not, didn't like to talk to the media. So that could be a carryover there. The other thing is, there are questions that were being asked of players that were sometimes silly, sometimes obtuse, sometimes were like, baited questions, I think. And maybe the decision was I didn't want to, he wanted to avoid all that. And Jonathan Gannon said afterwards, I don't blame him. Which I, in one respect, understood. In the other respect, I just thought to myself this whole time, I've been thinking to myself, if you're Marvin Harrison Jr., wouldn't you want to do more to shape your fate in the draft than kind of create questions that aren't necessary? Leaving people guessing as to what's going on. Why? Now, we all know that, Marvin Harrison Jr. is an All-American last 2 years and stud. And he shined with his high school quarterback last year. you know, on top of shining with CJ Stroud the year before. So, I mean, I don't think anybody in the world questions Marvin Harrison Jr.'s abilities. However, they're also, you know, starring at the college level and starring at the pro level are two different things, particularly for wide receivers, you know, because of the speed of the game and the more sophistication of the defensive game planning, you know. So there are things, you know, to try to consider how Marvin Harrison Jr.'s game is going to adapt to the NFL. The one thing that has concerned me is, you know, in games that I watched him, he looked tentative running routes over the middle. And in today's NFL, I'm of the belief that the more you can attack teams and be successful over the middle, the greater chance you have of sustaining drives and scoring touchdowns and winning games. And, you know, if you're going to draft a receiver that high, you'd want him to be versatile and do all those things like Larry Fitz was. You know, Fitz became a dog over the middle, you know, Todd Haley helped him do that. Kurt Warner helped him do that. And I just, the one question mark that I have is, you know, will, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. have a career path like Larry's where he, you know, shows tremendous versatility. You can use him in all ways and in all packages. That's my only question. And as far as the Cardinals go, if I were in the room, the one question that would be most important to me would be, how excited would you be if we take you? How excited are you about coming to the Cardinals? And, you know, give us an honest answer. We'd like to know that. If he said, yeah, I'd be really excited, you know, I'd come in and join my buddy Paris, you know, Paris, my bud, my tackle, and, you know, Kyler. And, you know, I'd be all excited about that. And if that's the answer, then that, you know, that's a huge step moving forward. And then if he asks, is there anything you need to see from me at a pro day, and whatever you asked him, he was, you know, very eager to do, then everything's good, you know. But there's this part of me that says, you know, this is a guy with such ability. I mean, he could have been the talk of the combine. If he came in and, you know, blew away the field, not only could it improve it, you know, would like seal the deal, also would put him in the picture of the number one pick, because these quarterbacks are no slam dunks. And, you know, I don't know if it's meaningful to him to go to the number, you know, and the number one pick might not be the Bears, particularly since they seem to want to draft a quarterback. So it could be a team that trades up, that, you know, works to Marvin Harrison's advantage. And, you know, being the number one pick in a draft is, for a wide receiver, be a stunning achievement. Maybe that doesn't matter as much to him, but the way that he's going about it is more passive aggressive, and he's just kind of leaving it up to, you know, how the chips fall. Now, it might have been just to how the chips fall anyway, but with a guy of his abilities, I mean, you know, I think he could have been front and center, a bell cow at the combine, and gotten everyone extremely excited, over the moon excited about his prospects. Instead, I can, you know, without wanting to not participate in the drills and then also saying he may not do a pro day, it just, you know, and just go and watch the tape. I mean, a lot of players would like to do that. I mean, Roma Dunze, who last two seasons in college football had more receiving yards than anyone, came in there and blew everyone away. Absolutely blew everyone away. The way he ran, the way he competed, the way he did the gauntlet was awesome. His attitude, the way he commanded and comported himself in front of the media, the way he handled all that with such aplomb and articulation. I mean, because he was visible and in sight and doing all these wonderful things, on top of staying after being the last player on the field, trying to beat his three-cone score, wanted to get a 6.6, which is awesome in a three-cone. That'd be something I'd want to see what Marvin Harrison Jr. would score it. Because that's that short area quickness, Kyle, that, you know, separates some receivers from others. And, the thing about Roma Dunze is that, you know, this is a guy who's very clever, but he also has a knack, a physical knack, of gaining separation, or at least he has in college. Mm-hmm. And then he's also got another extreme knack of pulling down contested catches. His 23 contested catches were tied for first in FBS. And his attitude was just so infectious. You know, you could see right now this guy you hire, if you select him, he's going to be a real positive player for helping to, you know, upgrade your culture because of all the intangibles, but the sheer talent he brings to the equation and the desire. So because Marvin Harrison kind of came in, met with a few teams and left and never talked and had no presence there otherwise, it just felt awkward. And it made me wonder, about whether the Cardinals are really high on his list or not. And, you know, I started thinking about his dad, and I started to think about, well, what would his dad think of his son going to the Cardinals? And here were my questions. One is, how comfortable would his dad be with the environment that's, you know, surrounding the owner and, you know, the report cards and, you know, the way people are treated in that building, which hopefully is, you know, started to change for one, and all of the impact of the, the Brian Flores suit, which has offshoots through the Steve Wilks scenario, who's a key component in that suit, and the Terry McDonough allegations. And it's not just McDonough, Ron Miniger has doubled down on all that and exposed things. Yeah, like as bizarre as Bidwill reducing African-American women under his watch to tears after belittling them or treating them unkindly, some of them pregnant at the time. That's going to be further investigated, although the people who investigated so far have corroborated that and had them as witnesses. From that standpoint, it makes you wonder, also from a systematic approach, if you're Marvin Harrison Jr. and you're Marvin Harrison Sr., I don't think the Cardinals' current offense, the system, is QB-friendly enough or passer-friendly enough for a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. who's going to want plenty of targets a game. This is a run-heavy offense. It's a Stefanski-style, run-heavy, pass-it-later kind of style that is predicated on generating a strong ball control type offense. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. is a home run hitter who wants to score from any point on the field. And but you got to get him, you know, you got to make it a priority to get him the ball. And, you know, the other thing is with Kyler, you know, I mean, it's been a mixed bag for Kyler with his receivers, his top ones. I mean, he played with three guys that are look like Hall of Famers. I mean, Fitz is a lock. Fitz has covered from Kyler since, but that did not end well for Fitz and, you know, with Kyler. To the point of here's another guy who didn't talk, didn't even announce his retirement. You know, bizarre. You know, people have accepted that, and that's what Fitz always wanted, just sort of, you know, ride off into the sunset. And but it's still, it's bizarre. You know, and then with Hopkins, I mean, we've seen the blowouts that he and Kyler have had on the sidelines, you know, both two very competitive guys. And, you know, there were times when they were just were nicely in sync, but times when they were just way out of sync, and how much that had to do with Hopkins not practicing on a regular basis and Kyler being frustrated about that. Who knows? Or a clash of egos. But put it this way, if Hopkins was so enamored with Kyler, even though Kyler was hurt and was going to come back at some point during the season, you would have thought he would have made more of an effort to try to stick around if he was that convinced that Kyler was his guy. But that's twice now Hopkins has left quarterbacks that, you know, that he initially said were his guys and then, you know, just left them. And it's kind of incredible to think too that Hopkins has been on three teams and left three coaching staffs and GMs frozen out, three for three. I don't think that's just purely coincidence. So the Hopkins scenarios. Now, that first year with Hopkins, he had 1,400 yards, and that was still a 16-game season, I believe. So that was awesome. But it also, if you look at it, he had the vast majority of targets, which I know frustrated the heck out of Fitz and others on the team. I mean, Kyler was just kind of locked in on Hopkins most of the time. And when you throw it at a player that many times, he's gonna if the player's any decent, he's gonna be 1,000 yards receiver for sure. But still, there were impressive moments there. But the next year, the production, the targets were down. The TDs were up, but then Hopkins got injured, had the ped violation coming into year three for him. You know, it was got to be a tangled mess. And he and Kyler, you know, started to try to get it back together, but then, you know, it just kind of fell apart. And then Kyler with AJ Green, who curiously some pundits compare Marvin Harrison Jr. to, that almost from the get-go was not a good match. Save for that unbelievable 2-point catch in Las Vegas. That was a dandy. And a couple other really great plays, the long touchdown bomb during the 7-0 start to 2021 season in LA that helped the Cardinals beat the Rams for the first time against McVay. That was huge. Kyler laid out a dime on that one. But, you know, if you look at, is it a system fit that would excite Marvin Harrison Jr.? If they're looking at, these are football guys, so they're looking at this kind of stuff. I would say that, you know, they probably not. And then how comfortable you feel with Kyler? Well, you'd love the arm. You'd love, you know, the playmaking ability. But, you know, would there be enough of a chance to open up that offense with Kyler and now if he has Marvin Harrison Jr.? So, you know, and they're even talking about bringing back Hollywood Brown, which – you know, put it this way, and we were just talking about this last week, is if you bring back Hollywood Brown and give up one-fifth of your cap space to do it when we have so many other needs, and then draft Marvin Harrison Jr. in a not passer-friendly offense, you know, that's run first and ball control. You know, if you're Kyler Murray, Hollywood Brown's one of your best friends, maybe even your the best friend now that they're together more, you know, and CD Lamb's kind of, you know, on another team. You're going to want to get him the football, and particularly in a contract. I mean, it can't, unless they sign Hollywood to a long-term deal, which I can't imagine, because I'd imagine that Hollywood's market value is not going to be where he wants it to be this year. So he's going to have to take a one-year deal probably somewhere. I mean, so you got the pressure of that. Then you've got Marvin Harrison Jr. You don't draft Marvin Harrison Jr. to not throw for him, at him. But then you also have the notion that of the guy that Kyler has clicked with as well as anybody since he's gotten to Arizona for a stretch of games was, Trey McBride, who in this type of offense very well should be a number one target because of the play actions off of 12 and 13 personnel. And you want to attack that middle. And Kyler and Trey have something special going there. And so there's only one football and you're trying to run ball control. I mean, I don't know how you keep Hollywood happy. You keep Marvin Harrison Jr. happy, you know, and in this offense, is wide receiver one of the key, most important positions? And I would argue that no. I mean, if you look at the Browns and Stefanski's offenses, he typically has one receiver who's, you know, who's ahead of the others. But if you asked Baker Mayfield, if you asked Odell Beckham Jr., if you asked, a lot of the Donovan Peoples-Jones, a lot of those receivers in Stefanski offenses were frustrated as hell. She's just not getting the targets as much. And, you know, that's something you sacrifice by playing ball control and wanting to run the football. So, you know, that's a scenario where system matters. And, you know, if I'm Marvin Harrison Jr., I'd want to go to a pass-friendly team that's, you know, running out of 10 personnel most of the time. And, you know, with a meaning four wide receivers and one running back, you know? I mean, that would really be special for him, I think. A special situation for him because it could, also, you have the other receivers that teams have to worry about. You're spreading people out there. I think it creates better target scenarios when you have that, rather than just being like a one wide receiver to a side in a double tight end situation where defenses can tilt towards you and bracket you. And they'll give you a little bit of the middle, but if you're not that keen about going over the middle too, that's a scenario. So, I mean, I'd be really curious to know if deep down inside Marvin Harrison Sr. is kind of like praying that his son doesn't go to the Cardinals. What would you think about that, Kyle?
Marvin Harrison himself, I could see maybe wanting to steer Junior in a certain direction. From most of the indications I've seen, it doesn't seem like Marvin Harrison Jr. has a preference in either direction of team. I mean, he knows it's probably going to be one of four teams as it stands right now between Chicago, Washington, New England, and Arizona. But I haven't seen really anything that says he's preferring or not preferring one destination over the other. You laid out some pretty good points about what Senior might be thinking around not just the Cardinals organization, but some of the offensive concepts that they run, which
right.
I think part of why I have faith in Drew Petzing in a way that maybe other people didn't is because of their ability to evolve the offense based on opponent and the personnel that they had throughout the season. You saw way more quarterback running concepts the last few weeks of the season. They were willing to air it out a couple times more and take chances once they had Kyler Murray under center as opposed to Josh Dobbs. So I think even if they end up with Marvin Harrison Jr., there will be an evolution of the offense to put your best players in a position to succeed. And, you know, one of the things that I think will really help is if they improve the interior offensive line, or at least just get a little bit better health from the interior offensive line. I think that'll make everything a little bit easier, because what they'll avoid is more plays that end in incompletions or plays that end in negative yardage if they can get some protection in the running game and then use the running game to set up the pass.
Yeah, we had 4 out of the 5 offensive line spots played pretty well all year, and it was the left guard spot that was an issue. And word is, rumor is, Cardinals are looking to sign a left guard in free agency to address that and button that down. So good point there in getting the offensive line set. Here's the issue. The question I have with Drew Petzing is just how well he's going to be able to coach quarterbacks in his system, because the early returns raise questions. And this is what's going on in Cleveland now too, with Deshaun Watson, the guys they played until Joe Flacco got there and suddenly was throwing dimes, which was bizarre and amazing.
Until the Cinderella clock ran out and everything fell apart.
Exactly. And Flacco led some really incredible comebacks. And his QBR was better than anyone's that they've had in a couple of years in that brief amount of time. What do you have, like 6 or 7 starts or whatever? I mean, the Cardinals went through 4 quarterbacks in the preseason, couldn't decide on one of them, cut 2 of them, actually 3 of them, 3 of the 4, and then rushed in Josh Dobbs. Dobbs's QBR was not good. I think it was in the 40s. Kyler's was in the 40s. Clayton Toon in his one game against the Browns. I mean, you can't even really even qualify that, because it was just sending a player to the wolves. I mean, for a rookie who hasn't started a game, and it's now game, what was it, 9 of the NFL season, or 8 or 9,
yeah. You and I are in agreement on the Clayton Toon sample size is way too small to represent any meaningful,
right,
data.
Right. I mean, QBR matters, because QBR factors in all aspects of quarterback play, which actually, means that Dobbs and Kyler got high marks for their running, but the passing part was the problem. And the consistency of the passing part. Now, Kyler started to show down the stretch in that Eagles game. He really took a step forward and started connecting with Michael Wilson and Greg Dortch. And if that continues, and he can build off of that, but now, if you're bringing back Hollywood Brown and you have Marvin Harrison Jr., you're going to have to throw the ball more, one would think. Does that get you a little away from what kind of success they had with the running game? I mean, here's what Kurt Warner would say about a Stefanski offense, which he would not want to play in, is that his philosophy always was to establish a rhythm in the passing game to set up the run. that you don't sacrifice the rhythm of the passing lane by, you know, focusing so much on the running game. And that to establish a passing game, you got to throw it. Like, I remember, you know, being, watching Patriots the last, all of Belichick's years. I remember when Charlie Weiss was the coordinator, and in one game, he threw, to start the game with Brady, he threw 19 straight passes without a run. And it's a game they just dominated from the start, and Brady got in a rhythm, and you couldn't stop him, you know? And this is the thing about ball control offense, too, is it creates for lower scoring games that typically will come down to the fourth quarter, as we saw with the Cardinals. And you better have the defense, like the Browns do, to close people out. Otherwise, you know, you're going to lose a lot of close games. So, you know, rather than the kind of more wide open offenses that want to try to blow you out and want to try to just get way up on you from the get-go, you know. And so, you know, and what Kurt Warner would argue is, if I'm only throwing the ball X amount of times and, you know, I'm handing the ball off twice in a row, and then now I'm in a pressure third down having to throw the ball after I haven't thrown the ball in like three or four times, you know, chances are my rhythm's not going to be where I need it to be to consistently convert in those pressure situations. And, you know, the other thing is, and I'm always fascinated with this, of an offensive philosophy that let's try to get 2 yards and two downs consistently, not three. Let's try to go past the sticks in two plays and play it that way. And then it almost, you know, you've got to, if you don't get there, at least you might get close enough to, you know, convert consistently on third downs. Is there's a way to look at this rather than, you know, just trying to set up, you know, run for three, pass a short, throw a pass for 4 yards. So now you have three, you know, third and three, you know, set up a lot of situations like that, which are pressure packed, you know, you've got to be able to deliver. And it was so frustrating to me, as you know, during this season, so many of the third down plays for the Cardinals under Petsing were what, you know, Red Sea or ROTB coined as the third and give up offense, where we threw consistently 3 yard passes on third and five that were just immediately, you know, where the receiver was immediately tackled, and now it's fourth and two. I mean, that makes no sense to me whatsoever. I mean, if you're gonna run ground control and ball control, you have to make a concerted effort to get the ball past the sticks on third down. So, you know,
well, one of the things that can help you get the ball past the sticks on third down is having a Marvin Harrison Jr. one-on-one on the outside, where you just throw up the ball and say, go get it. And I know that that's sometimes the simplest answer you can throw at it, but you don't have to run the third and give up offense if you have a go-to threat who you know can get off the ball one-on-one, and you toss it up and they'll be open. I know a lot of teams don't, when it comes to those third and medium type plays, they don't necessarily try to scheme people open. They try and get their best players available in space. And when they have a rapport with the quarterback, that makes everything a little bit easier. And to the point you mentioned earlier, like I feel like the Hollywood Brown thing is a little bit redundant if you're going to go Marvin Harrison Jr. and Hollywood Brown because right. of the other skill position players the Cardinals have. For example, if New England, who has, you know, Tyquan Thornton and I guess Mike Gesicki at this point as their go-to skill position players, if they were to sign Hollywood Brown and draft Marvin Harrison Jr. at number three in the Alex Van Pelt offense, which obviously Alex Van Pelt, offensive coordinator, Drew Petsing, quarterback coach in 2021 and 2022 in Cleveland, I think that would make more sense. But because the Cardinals have a Trey McBride, because they have a Michael Wilson, because they have pass catching running backs in their offense, I think that would make more sense to just bring in Marvin Harrison Jr. and even Greg Dortch, who's in there also, can do very similar things. They already have the skill position players that maybe a team like the Patriots needs two or three. The Cardinals seem like they need one playmaking wide receiver and then another one maybe later in the draft. Or the idea that you've brought up that I really like, bringing in a Jalen Guyton who has a rapport with Kyler but is only a league minimum type of receiver.
Right. Yeah. Because if you want a guy who can get over the top of defense, Guyton's got that ability. And Kyler knows it very well from his days at Allen High School together, their days together. You know, but here's a stat that might surprise you. You know, so you were saying if you got a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr., you can just throw it up to him. Marvin Harrison Jr., last year, 43.3% in contested catches and 82.6 grade in man coverage. Then you look at Rome Odunze, 75% contested catches, 89.5 in man coverage. Yay, yay, yay. I mean, that's dramatically different. And, you know, Rome Odunze doesn't have, you know, the pedigree or the name brand. But, you know, if you're, and he had, you know, the most contested catches in the country last year, tied for first. You know, I mean, look at that. And here's a guy out, you know, busting his butt at the combine and making a name for himself on top of what he, you know, he could have said too, watch my tape and draft me. You know, contested catches 21, which is first in the FBS. And the rate was 75%. That's blue dot, which is highest color on PFF. Everything for Odunze was a blue dot. Receiving grade, 89.5, blue dot. Yards per route run, 2.93, blue dot. Drop rate, only 3.2%, blue dot. Contested catch rate, 75%, blue dot. Grade versus man coverage, 89.5, blue dot. Wow. I mean, let's take a look at Neighbors and compare Neighbors. Okay, so you got three blue dots for Neighbors and two gray dots, which is meh. So the receiving grade was 93.1, blue dot. Yards per route run, 3.64. That's outstanding. That's blue dot. Drop rate, 5.3%. That's gray dot. Contested catch rate, same as Marvin's, 45.5, gray dot. Grade versus man coverage, 90.8, blue dot. So only 10 contested catches, which was tied for 46 in the country. You know, where we, and but second in deep catches, which was second to Rome Odunze, who had 23. Neighbors had 19. So, you know, I mean, you look at these stats, and of course, Odunze has the size. Odunze also made the point at the combine, which I thought was fascinating for him to make, was that you guys haven't seen a lot of me in the slot. I can win there consistently from the slot. And the reason why you didn't see a lot of him in the slot was Jalen Polk, his roomie and best friend, had a, you know, 1,000-yard season from the slot. And the kid McMillan, who I like a lot, also played the slot. Those two guys were the key slot guys. So, you know, Rome didn't have to at Washington because they were in the slot, and they didn't translate as well. Jalen McMillan didn't translate as well to the outside. I mean, Rome just played outside most of the time. You know, so although he did have a share of Let's see how many slots he had. He played a little bit in there at times, but mostly in stacks. It wasn't, you know, like clear slot. Yeah, only 104, only 77 the year before. So, but man, 1,600. 32, 39 yards, 17.8, 13 touchdowns. Oh, so impressive. And you see this kid's attitude. I mean, if it were me and I'm looking at all this and, you know, one guy's not showing up and just watch my tape and the hunger and desire I saw from Roma Dunze at the combine. I mean, I wrote an article on Revenge of the Birds. Are all roads leading to Rome for Cardinals? I mean, because this is just too impressive. I mean, this is the thing. When one guy's sleeping, another guy's working. And, you know, I mean, tape is one thing, but also showing up is another. And also showing up by example of, like, I'm eager to do whatever you want me to do, putting team first and not having to, you know, not – dictating your own terms the way some people do. I mean, and so I was wondering, I was so impressed with what the Texans did last year. I think a lot of people are now. And I went back and looked at, you know, how critical was the combine for the Texans last year? Okay. So, you know, Bryce Young elects not to participate in the drills or the running in the combine and defers it to his pro day. Did C.J. Stroud do that? The answer is no. He put on a clinic at the combine. So he shows up and, you know, I'll have a link to that on this, you know, on this podcast written up by Revenge of the Birds. I mean, I have a link posted on that where you can watch C.J. Stroud and what he did accomplish at the combine. Of course, Bryce Young goes first. I mean, Bryce Young did pretty well at his pro day. But, I mean, C.J. Stroud showed up at the combine and, you know, and passed. And what it gives you a chance to do is to look at and compare at the rest of the field. He wasn't shy about doing that in the least. And I think that Bryce Young was. And look at the kind of seasons they had. I mean, and then, you know, you look at, did Will Anderson participate in the combine? You betcha. I mean, if any defensive player just would say, I'm not coming, just watch the tape. He could have done that. By showing up the combine and then running as well as he did, that, I think, sealed the deal for the Texans to just say, you know what, we love this guy. Let's trade back up. Let's give up a lot to get him. But in Stroud and in Anderson, they're two bell cows we can build our offense and defense around. Let's go get them. You know, like, combine to the Texans mattered. Then they took Juice Scruggs, who had a really good combine, the center from Penn State. And then they took arguably who was going to be maybe the NFL Rookie of the Year before he got hurt, was Tank Dell, who was a combine wonder. You know, blistered at the combine and was turning heads. I mean, that is... talk about hitting it. I mean, but these guys showed up and showed, you know, and made their cases. And, you know, you can't, I'm disappointed that Marvin Harrison is electing to go this route. It causes doubts for me. I'm already doubtful that he's, you know, the best system fit for the Cardinals. I think Brock Bowers is. I was disappointed that Brock Bowers didn't participate in the combine and is deferred to his pro day, but I also kind of get that he's still rehabbing from his ankle surgery. So that's a mitigating factor. But he showed up and talked at length to the media, and I watched every question of it, and I was very impressed with how he handled it. Just quick, short answers and got right to the point. So he was a presence there rather than, you know, if and he was meeting with teams and interviewing with teams. So he was doing that part and he was visible. And I give Bowers, a pass on that because of his situation with his ankle. He wanted another few weeks to just get it as best he could. And I think he's pretty much almost 100% healed. But he played on it. Amazing how he came back and played on it at the end of the year after the procedure, came back so fast. That's how much he wants to win and how much he wants, you know, he's willing to sacrifice. So all that makes sense to me. And now we can eagerly anticipate, I think it's March 13th, he's going to be, you know, in full bore at the Georgia Pro Day. So, you know, when there's a mitigating factor like that, you can understand it. So, you know, I just really admire the way the Texans seize the day, carpe the diem at the 2023 Combine. And I wish that the Cardinals would take the same approach. And really get after the people who, you know, are high culture guys. And, you know, I'm not sure how much of a leader Marvin Harrison Jr. is. He's kind of a chill guy, which is fine. Larry was too. So, which is fine. But for a young team that needs a culture boost, you know, it really helps when you get like alpha guys who are leaders. Roma Dunze strikes me as an alpha. And how he comported himself at the combine and how he presents himself and how he plays and how he bleeds, you know, for his team. And I think Marvin Harrison does that in his own ways. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, I feel like Roma Dunze brings more to the table, and I think he's more versatile. And, you know, that's hard because, you know, so many Cardinal fans are just so set on Marvin Harrison Jr. And, you know, pundits from the combine were saying that left and right that what they're hearing is, you know, if Harrison's at four, the Cardinals are going to jump on him no matter what. And so that's what the fans are delighting in. And, you know, my feeling all along has been that the Cardinals won't be able to resist trading down if they get a really good offer at four. And the question would be, how far could they trade down and still get, you know, one of these top receivers if that's what they still want to do? And, you know, I had a trade proposal on Revenge of the Birds with the Giants from four to six. You can see it on Revenge of the Birds right now. And I did a big poll where almost 1,000 people have voted on this trade proposal. And my proposal was, for the Cardinals to trade pick 4 and 90 in this year's draft to the Giants for pick 6, pick 37, which is their second round pick, a third round pick in 2025, and Azeez Ojulari, the edge rusher for the Giants, who's heading into a contract year on his rookie deal, to join him, pair him with his brother, OJ. I thought that would be pretty cool. And Azeez has missed 17 games over the last two seasons. And maybe this is the year he gets back to his as a rookie at 8 sacks. I think he has 17 career sacks in 35 games. So the 35 games he's played. So that's a pretty good ratio. And it wouldn't be a bad scenario for the Cardinals to add an edge guy to that. And 43% agreed with it. And then there were other reasons to say no. So I'll share that with you right now, what the results have been. And I think that a lot of people were pretty impressed with the value, because 472 people voted for yes, this trade has good value. And then the next highest was 30% no, if MHJ is on the board, stay at number four. That's 324 votes. So, you know, 472 to 324. But there were others, 192 said, which is 18%, said, no, I want a bigger haul from a team picking 7 through 14. So a lot of people are hoping for that. And then 6% or 61 said, no, stay at 4 and take the best player available no matter what. And then 30 voters said other, and have explained in the comment section what their other was. So what this says to me is, you know, there's kind of a split. I mean, with the most votes getting yes, the trade has good value. I mean, here's an argument I made too, is that the Cardinals could trade from 4 to 6, and Marvin Harrison could still be on the board at 6. I mean, you could say, what? Well, you know, the Giants are trading up for quarterback. So now you got that. The next pick, the 5th pick, is the Chargers. Right, Kyle? The Chargers.
That would be correct.
Right. Do you see Jim Harbaugh in his first pick as a Chargers head coach selecting a Buckeye?
I don't see him selecting a wide receiver either.
Right. With Keenan Allen. I mean, they're loaded.
They just took one last year. Yeah.
Right. So, but I see him taking a Bowers.
Gerald Maybe. Everett,
free agent. I also see him taking, their two tackles were pretty decent last year.
They do need a right tackle. They probably do need a right tackle, but they have an all-pro left tackle, obviously, in Rashawn Slater.
Correct. Now, that's an interesting scenario because, you know, would they go with Talese Fuaga, who's the best right tackle in this draft, in my opinion, over Joe Alt, or would they just select Alt and put him at right tackle like the Cardinals did with PJJ?
You know, it's interesting because if I were in the chair of the Chargers and going with that selection, I would take just whoever you regard as the best defensive player available. And right. Honestly, they could fill pretty much any position, corner, right. Edge.
Right.
But I don't know exactly what direction the Chargers will go. It's just your point is correct about wide receiver probably not being the option. Correct.
So you could get that package and perhaps still have all the guys you want on your board. Also, there have been rumors that the Chargers want to trade out.
Yeah, but who, especially if in this scenario, Marvin Harrison Jr. would be there at number 5, I mean, they would get a haul for that pick. I'm struggling to see how the draft would fall to the point where Harrison Jr. is available at 4, but the Giants are still trading up for a quarterback at that point. How would that work?
Right. Well, some people are predicting 4 in a row.
Because oh, you're saying
JJ McCarthy.
But wouldn't the Giants be able to sit at 6 and probably still get McCarthy in this scenario?
Not if other teams are trying to trade up in front of them.
Well, I guess that's
because
that
then
is.
Then you also have the 5th pick where the Chargers are eager to, you know, move down from. So, I mean, if he's your guy and you worry that someone else is going to come up and get him, and he's the one you want. I mean, I think with Brian Daboll, J.J. McCarthy would be a really fascinating fit.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't see it with J.J. McCarthy, but I know a lot of draft people that I take advice from also view J.J. McCarthy as he... You know, he's a first-round prospect, and if you're a first-round quarterback prospect, you usually end up going in the top five because people just reach for the chance to get that star quarterback. So I would be surprised if that's the scenario, if they go four quarterbacks, one, two, three, four, back-to-back-to-back. But under that circumstance, I would vote yes on your trade proposal in the poll that we had up, most definitely, because... Aziz Ojulari would be a nice pickup for the Cardinals, and to add another draft pick, and you're only moving down two spots. I think that would be awesome.
Right. Yeah, I would really like a trade like that, regardless of who's there, because there's so many.
Yeah, you're guaranteed to get either Bowers or Adunze at pick six.
Right, and those are my two favorite guys. Offensively, I'm not a fan of taking one of those tackles that early. Alt is a little, he's a really good technician. But, you know, I think for the Cardinals offense, he plays too refined. I think they like, you know, more athletic, you know, guys with the hips, and the pulling ability and the feet to get out and make plays, you know, blocks in space. That's why Troy Fautanu, oh my God, I think he'd be perfect for us at tackle. I know everyone wants to kick him in at guard. I don't. Plus, he came out of the combine with 34 and a half inch arms. Oh my goodness. Nobody saw that coming. I mean, that's one of the reasons why sometimes they say, oh, well, if you got, you know, 32 inch arms, or, you know, even 33, slide down to guard where you're better off. You got, with his athletic ability and his feet, the combination of 34 inch arms and his counter ability with his feet on pass pro. Oh my God. I mean, that would be a guy who really excites me. And unfortunately, I think he's done enough where I don't think the Cardinals can get a whiff of him at 27, at pick 27. But maybe I think wide receivers are going to come flying off the board as fast as, you know, this wide receiver class is just so talented. Some of these guys, like, you know, Xavier Worthy broke the combine record, right, Kyle?
Yep, he did, in fact. 4.21.
He was moving as fast as you were driving down to San Diego. I mean, you know, in your getaway car.
The one thing that I will never forget about Xavier Worthy was his freshman year at Texas. What is that? 2021. That was the year that Texas lost at home to Kansas, and it was the first time Kansas had won a road Big Ten game in, like, and I believe this is a true stat, 48 years. And so... in that game, he had like 20 targets and 16 catches for 200 and something yards. I'm like, well, I know that guy's going to the NFL at some point, because even on this terrible, it was the first Sark year, I was like, well, he's a five-star who's just cooking. He's going to go to the NFL. And then years later, he's breaking the combine record, and someone is going to draft him in the first round. Because, I mean, when John Ross broke the record, he went from a second-round pick to top 10 pick in the draft. Someone's going to pick Xavier Worthy in the first round.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, plus the tape is good. I mean, and the character looks good. I mean, he's going to be. But once the receivers start falling, which is going to be early and often, I think, you know, teams are going to... You know, I'm worried about who the Chiefs get. I mean, one of these great receivers could be sitting there for the Chiefs. Oh, my God.
Hi, Ladd McConkey. Are you ready to be a Kansas City Chief?
Yeah, or Leggett. Mm-hmm. Leggett is, I mean, tremendous from the slot, Xavier Leggett. I mean, I mean, one of my favorite in this draft, who I think is, you know, a high second round choice at the least, is Roman Wilson. And people have him not even in their top 10.
I was talking to my friend Blake Jude, who's done scouting for, I think, 7 or 8 years now. He said, best and deepest wide receiver class ever. There are going to be 12 receivers taken in the first two rounds, and every single one of them has a chance to be a wide receiver one in the right situation.
Right. That's awesome. Yep.
Yeah. And yeah. It's the first time ever that his number one overall graded prospect is a wide receiver in right. Mr. Marvin Harrison Jr.
Oh, wow. And yet, here I am, you know, 2 days ago, looking at Brian Thomas Jr. take the top off of defenses at LSU, and I'm going, like, he may be the best deep threat in the entire draft. I mean, that dude can cook. And what did he run, a 4.33? Yeah, at his size? Yeah.
Yeah, you got 12 receivers that are going to get taken in the first two rounds.
I mean, he's so athletic. You know, it's like, whoa. I mean, he just jumps off the tape when you watch him. And I was watching him. He played in their bowl game. You know, talk about a guy who just wanted to play and make a name for himself. See, he's just doing this process so right. You know, he's going to be a first-round pick. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, this kid is major talent. And, you know, if you didn't have, you know, Malik Nabers getting so many targets on that team, who knows what he could have put, what kind of numbers he could have put up. I mean, he's probably, well, I'm going to guess, I think he's got the potential to be a home run hitter in the NFL. Yeah, he still put up 1,177 yards, 17.3, average 17 touchdowns. But here again, interesting. Only one blue dot, and that's yards per run route, 2.61. Receiving grade, 75.1. Grade versus man coverage, 61.2. Drop rate, 6.8. That's not good. Contested catch rate, 53.8. That's better than Marvin and Nabers, but it's still gray. So let's see how many drops he had. He had 7 contested catches, which isn't, you know, so that speaks to your argument. I mean, with others who are better at it, he had 5 drops out of, you know, 62, wait, out of 68. That's not terrible. 5 drops, 68 receptions. Not great, but it's not terrible either.
So. Yeah, but when you set the standard high for yourself on catch rates, I mean, it's the Cardinals. When you've had Larry Fitzgerald into DeAndre Hopkins, right. You know, the catch rates get a little bit distorted.
Right. And but what's also really good was his 87 targets and 68 receptions. That's very good. That's why I'm surprised at the versus man coverage, because you're not getting that many catches on that many, on that few number of targets without getting open. And his contested catch rate wasn't high either. So something was going on there where he's getting open and he's catching the football. But man, what a talent. And, you know, in that bowl game, he was really shined against Wisconsin. He had 2 touchdowns, and I was so impressed with him. I was like, wow. You know, and then Ad Mitchell, no relation, but, you know, I'm proud of him being a Mitchell. Dude can play. Plus, he cooked in the 40. He had a 4.3 something. 6'4" at 6'4". Wow. He had 845 yards for Texas, 15.4, 11 touchdowns. Only one drop. So drop rate is blue chip, 1.8. Receiving grade, 74.1. Man versus man coverage, 66.9, which is gray. 1.72 yards per route run is gray. Contested catch rate, only 36.4%, gray. But still, what a heck of a talent he is. And, yeah. So, but Roman Wilson, oh my gosh. 4 out of 5 blue dots. I knew it. I hadn't seen that till now. 4 out of 5 blue dots. This guy, I would describe him, his style of play, as effortless precision. I mean, this kid scoots and catches it. He's like, all right, so receiving grade, 84.5, blue dot. Yards route per run, 2.68, blue dot. Drop rate, 2.0%. He only had one drop in 48 out of 48 receptions. You know, for this, and this was on a non-pat, you know, a team that ran the ball. That's why this is so encouraging to me for the Cardinals, because Roman Wilson is so used to this. He's like Johnny on the spot just when you need to pass the ball. Versus man coverage, 75.5. Blue dot. Man, love this kid. You know, he's only 6 feet, 192, but he plays big. And under the brightest lights, he is big. I mean, he comes up huge. Look at him in the national championship game. And he's also a gadget player where you can move him around and, you know, make it hard for defenders to pick him up. He's great out of motion. He's tremendous out of that. And then you can also, he's really good. You can flip it to him on reverses. He's got wheels, so, you know. This wide receiver draft is loaded. I mean, loaded. Amazing. So, yeah. And, yeah, I don't know. I just have so many mixed emotions about this. It kind of bothers me that this has been a one pony show for, you know, all this time. Like, the only guy that matters is Marvin Harrison Jr., as if it's a done deal. And, you know, I don't want to – I watch the tape and I see this – you know, I see the highlights and I'm thrilled. But you know what? I can't get that Michigan game out of my mind. It bothered me. It was like on the biggest stage all year and the most important game. He left stuff out there. He didn't leave it all on the field. I mean, he played well. Don't get me wrong. He ended up with over 100 yards and, you know, made a nice TD there toward the end. And so, it wasn't like a bad game. But in that situation, you'd expect great from a guy like that, and it wasn't a great effort all the way around. On a few plays, he got out-leveraged. The Michigan guys fought for the football harder than he did. I was very impressed with how Michigan tried to play him. They tried to jump his routes. They tried to stack him. They tried to bracket him. They did a good job on him. They still couldn't contain him, which is a testament to this kid's amazing talent. And the way that Brian Day moved him around and got him free off motions, you know, impressive. But it's just that little something missing that gave me pause. And, you know, so, you know, then I'm watching other guys like Bowers and Adunze, and I never see him take a playoff. Ever. I'm like watching game, play after play, and I'm looking, I'm trying to find it. And I'm like, wow, these guys are such ballers. And I mean, most of the time, Marvin Harrison is, don't get me wrong. But he does have, he looks a little, you know, like he hears footsteps over the middle and looks very tentative doing that. And you know what? There's some receivers who are like that and never change. In the beginning, Larry was a little bit like that. But Todd Haley, like I said, and Kurt Warner were able to impress upon Larry, with your physicality and you're in better shape than any of these guys, you're going to deliver the blows, not absorb them. And once Larry learned that, oh my God. I mean, Larry was a dog. Absolute dog. And a zone killer. I mean, he was ideal. He was basically what Kelce is now to the NFL. He was the alpha dog, winning over the middle and at all angles of the field and busting up zones. Nobody could run zone against you if you had Larry or you have Kelce. A guy that I, you know, am pretty impressed with beyond all of this. If the Cardinals ever traded down deeper, this Byron Murphy II from Texas he packs dynamite. I think he's the best defensive tackle in this draft. He would be one to look at. And I love the two corners, Terry Arnold from Alabama and Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo. You can flip a coin there. I actually, you know, I think either one would be great. Love the way both of them, they're both ballers and both highly aggressive defenders who get after it. And so, you know, making a, if they traded down farther than that, if Harrison's off the board and they're going to plan B, if that's plan A, staying to take Harrison. And some have said it's been the plan all along. If Harrison's off the board and then, you know, you're looking for defensive players later on because you trade down to like 11 or 12. Having those guys there is a boon. I mean, Murphy would be a great pick in a stronger need position than wide receiver, to tell you the truth, right now. I mean, Christian Wilkins is on the market. He wasn't tagged. That's huge, but there'll be plenty of competition for him. You know, Cardinals have to make some splashes on the defensive line and free agency. What worries me right now is the five new defensive-minded head coaches, all of whom I think have a stronger allure around the NFL than Gannon. So that worries me. And because the competition for free agents is going to be fierce, you know, and you have the added cap space that everybody got with the salary cap going up, and there's real good solid talent out there, but it's not deep, deep, deep. You know, the big fish are going to go, like big fish, literally Christian Wilkins, Dolphin. They're going to go fast and furiously, and you've got to be able to outbid and, you know, outmaneuver the competition. And I hope that the allure is stronger for the Cardinals than I'm anticipating. But, you know, I mean, who wouldn't want to play for Mike McDonald right now? And notice this, that they just cut both their safeties, Adams and Diggs. You know, they're gonna transform that defense into something really special. And it's in our own division. This guy knows what he's doing big time. That job he did with Baltimore last year was outstanding, really, truly outstanding. So, you know, and then you have Dan Quinn. You know, he's going to make a lot of noise in D.C. and attract a lot of, you know, that Cowboys defense was just so prolific while he was there that people are going to say, give me a little something of that. So anyway, if you look at it longer term, you know, or the big picture, it's going to be hard for the Cardinals. And that's why I think Monty was kind of downplaying free agency a little bit by saying we'll be very aggressive. But he was kind of hedging his bets, you know, kind of preparing people that, you know, it may not be what, you know, as glitzy as people are hoping, but we're going to get good things done. So, and it all starts pretty soon. When does it start? Jeez.
Not next week. I think the Monday after that. So I think the 15th is, it's normally around the 5th. Let me see. Or maybe the 18th. Maybe Monday the 18th. Because I think the new league year.
Actually, I think it's earlier than that.
Would they do it on a Friday?
I think teams, the early NFL.
No, you're right. That you can start negotiating next Monday. You're right. On the 11th, you can start negotiating.
Yeah, baby. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no, okay. It starts Monday. I know they always do it on a Monday, but for some reason I thought it was is the Monday after.
Good call. And we're already getting trades. The Bills and the Bears made a trade there for an offensive lineman and fifth rounder. So, yeah, boy, we're going to get into full swing. And exciting time of year, it really is. And Combine was so exciting this year. I mean, I love those guys who show up and compete like that. I think it speaks volumes to their character because I know for everybody who does it, there's an element of risk. I mean, for Amarius Mims, you know, to tweak his hamstring or whatever happened. I mean, here's a guy that I see a whole lot of Cardinal fans mocking to the Cardinals at 27. I don't know how you can draft him as a first-round pick. For talent, for sure. But he's only played eight college football games. Because of injuries, you know, at that size, it just looks like he just can't hold up physically. His body's too big in certain ways to support his legs. And he's got to find a way to work that out. And once he does, then he gets experience. But eight college football games? I mean, yeah. I mean, he's got enormous physical gifts. No question. And he looks like a great kid, too. But I don't think he's a plug-and-play. He's so raw right now. I don't think you can plug-and-play him. And can he hold up physically? So, I mean, Mims is a pipe dream. I just don't know how you risk that. I mean, there's high reward for sure if he winds up being dominant, but to expect him, and they're trying to draft a guy they can play right now. And I'll tell you what, I mean, there could be guys there who, you know, like the kid Barton from Duke. Love that kid. Love him. I mean, he's a experienced captain type starter who can, you know, I mean, he's a dog. He gets after blocks like, whoa, he would fit our system really well. And he's versatile. He could play probably any spot along the line. He's just a plug and play player. He's tough as nails and boy, he sustained blocks. Oh my goodness. Would love that kid. And Jordan Morgan, you know, from Arizona, you know, that's assuming that Troy, you know, Fatano is off the board because Troy Fatano would be amazing. Almost would love it for the Cardinals to trade back up to get Fatano because they might have to maybe give up one of those third round picks to do it. He's such a great system fit. I just think he'd be fantastic. So it's a lot to get excited about with the draft. coming up, but also now with on the eve of free agency. And let's see what Monty's got cooking for that, and what kind of splash they can make. They're going to need, they have the money, and they're going to need to pull some rabbits out of the hat for us to be competitive next year, particularly on defense. On offense, we got most everyone coming back. And if Kyler takes the next step forward with that offense, we like our chances and can sustain focus and rhythm, like our chances. But defensively, we really need depth, quality starters on the defensive line. I'm hoping they'll rethink the inside linebacker situation and slide Kaiser back to where he was good with the Eagles at weak inside linebacker, and come up with a strong Mike. Then we need cornerback help. We need a deep safety who can cover over the top, which we didn't have last year. A lot of pieces to fill in there. Some interesting names that come up. Guys that are being, let go by other teams as well. Darius Robinson, the cornerback, I always really liked. He's out there now. So there are guys that, have entered the pool. And it'd be interesting to see who the Cardinals have picked out as guys they want to really get after. And, and then there's Hassan Reddick out there. The Eagles have made it clear they'd be interested in trading him. I would give up one of our third-round picks to get him back. Reddick, the way he played for Gannon in that 1 year, he was a huge difference maker from Gannon's first year to Gannon's second. Adding Reddick in there was huge. And, so Reddick knows his role already, would know his role coming in. And, I'd be all over that. So I'm still thinking about my final offseason plan. Kyle may tweak his between now and the end.
I still want them to go after Chris Jones. They're just being very stingy right now.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah, they should absolutely still go for Chris Jones. I'm stunned that it seems like Christian Wilkins has more bidders than Chris Jones. I'm stunned that this is the development that's happening, but maybe people think that they're going to get a deal done in Kansas City before he ever hits free agency.
Yeah, yep, I know.
Also, pushing back on something you said earlier that was incorrect, you said Christian Wilkins is the big fish. Dolphins are mammals, so I don't think he's really a big fish out here.
Okay, the big mammal. I'll take that.
Dolphins okay, are not fish, mammal. But he's going to get big money from someone. I think there's like 6 or 7 teams that are in on Christian Wilkins.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a guy like that doesn't typically make it to free agency. So the competition there is going to be fierce. And the Texans have one of the top 3 teams with cap space. I mean, that's the other wild card here is, guys on defense who want to go play for D'Amico Ryans. I imagine he'd be at the top of players' lists.
I will say for the Texans, though, there are 2 beefy defensive tackles who might go in the first round that are nearby in from the University of Texas. So if they wanted to draft either Byron Murphy or Tavondre Sweat, I feel like that would be a good move for them in the first round.
Yes, Sweat. Yeah, exactly. If Murphy gets to them, I could see that. And Sweat, maybe not in round 1, but I could see them jumping on him in round 2 or whatever. But
Sweat's the one prospect that I just like bringing up all the time because he's 366 pounds and I've seen him chase down receivers in the open field. Like, that dude is just stupid athletic. He's just physically so wonderful that I just love bringing him up every time, because any chance to talk about giant, beefy, 366-pound, basically linebacker is always fun.
Right. Yep. Yeah. It's interesting because PFF still has him like the 50th player in the draft. So everybody's drafting him in like the third round. I mean, he's not even getting a whiff of the third round. He's going to be late first round, second round at the early, you know, at the latest. A guy that big and that talented is not third round material. That's for sure. So, you know, PFF ought to upgrade him on their board so that we can't keep seeing him at like pick 48. You're like, what?
To the point you mentioned earlier, if I were to make one correction to my Cardinal offseason plan, it's that it's starting to look like there's a puncher chance my guy Kool-Aid is going to fall to 27. And I know there's a medical red flag and a long documented history of Monty taking medical red flag players that aren't awesome, but I'm still going to cape up for my guy Kool-Aid going no later than 27 for the Cardinals. So we'll see what happens there. Maybe my guy will end up falling to us at 27 somehow.
All right. Well, 27, he might be really good value there. The rap on him now from scouts is they're not convinced he has the hips. He's a little tight in the hips. And that's the, you know, buzz going around as to why he's sliding. And you know how they're so big on you got to flip your hips quickly and be able to change direction quickly. So, but maybe that was having to do part with the injury situation. So, I mean, his 2022 tape is way better. Well, not way. I mean, he still played well last year, but it is better. It's stronger. So,
well, yeah. And one of the things that happened last year is that for some weird reason, despite the fact they had two first round corners, they didn't really throw at Kool-Aid as much, which I thought was an interesting choice because Terrion Arnold is also very, very good, but they kind of made the call that it was just a weird like statistical split. That was just an interesting anomaly I saw.
Well, and you know, their teams were really happy not to have to face Brian Branch anymore in the slot. So, yeah, the teams went after them a little differently because of that. And Arnold stepped up and was making more plays. Is he better player than Kool-Aid? He lauds Kool-Aid for his development and everything. I think if Kool-Aid's, you know, hip tightness was the result of favoring the injury this past year from what they saw on tapes, then, and he's back to 100% and can flip those hips and turn, make the change of directions that corners are asked to do, then he'll be fine. And it would be a real value at 27. So
yeah, there's about six really good corners in this draft. I think from what I understand, after about six, it kind of drops a little bit. But if the Cardinals get any one of those, I think that'll be very helpful for them, given that they've already drafted two corners last year. They'll probably sign one in free agency here. If they get one of the six, they'll be happy. My personal preference was Kool-Aid, but it didn't look like a month ago like he would fall to 27, and now thanks to the medical red flag, it looks like there might be a puncher's chance.
Yeah, and Nate Wiggins unfortunately getting injured at the combine, that might drop his stock. He's very gifted and his size and speed. Cooper DeJean, I love the tape on that kid. Oh my god, he'd been battling injuries, so he's going to try to run at his pro day. He broke his leg. He's on the mend. But, man, that kid's really exciting. Mike Sandstrill, Sarenstil from Michigan is just, oh, my God, what a character guy. Of course, he's up here from Everett, Mass. Played for a guy that I coached against, John DiBiasso at Everett, who's one of the greatest coaches I've ever met. He's won all these state titles at Everett, and now he's at Catholic Memorial. And boy, oh boy, I mean, Sarenstrel is just a dynamic slot corner that, you know, he elevates everyone around him. I mean, PFF has him ranked 37, but it wouldn't surprise me the way people need to play the slot today, whether he sneaks into the back end of the first round so people can have him for 5 years. He's not the biggest kid at 5'10", 182, but boy, oh boy, does he get after it. And I'd be thrilled if the Cardinals tabbed him with their second round pick. Love Rake Straw from Missouri. Lassiter, Kamari Lassiter, a legacy in Arizona. That would be cool, getting Paris Johnson, who's a legacy, and then Kamari Lassiter. I love that kid, Lassiter. And Kyrie Jackson, I really love his length. And, and Max Melton put on a show at the Combine from Rutgers. Jarvis Brownlee Jr. out of JG's alma mater, Louisville, is an ascending player up the draft boards. And two guys that I really loved at the Senior Bowl were Cam Hart from Notre Dame, 6'2", 207, and Charles Smith-Wade from Washington State. Of course, we know that Jalen Thompson was a Washington State kid. This kid is just what a baller. Love that kid. PFF has him ranked 124. I think he's going to go sooner than that. Same with Hart, who's at 116. Brownlee's at 111. Florida State players, both really good prospects. Renardo Green, 6 foot, almost 190. And Jarian Jones, 6 foot, 191. Both graded really well last year, 83.2. It's 790.1 for Jones. Green and Jones are, you know, so actually this cornerback group, DJ James from, and Kalen Carson, James from Auburn, Carson from Wake Forest, Josh Newton from TCU. Oh man, this is a really deep, wonderful class at corners, which comes for great news to Cardinal fans. We want to add at the position. I could see us adding a corner and a combo, maybe even a corner and a guy who can double as a deep free safety in this draft, a corner who can double on top of getting a free agent, which I hope is Kenny Moore the second. Praying for him. Kenny, come on, man. So, concluding thoughts, Kyle.
So, one of the things that I think will be most interesting going into free agency is not necessarily the players they sign, not necessarily the dollar values that they sign, but the positions that they choose to fill in free agency. Because when we were laying out off-season plans and ideas, we could point to 8 key positions that the Cardinals are looking at. I know you did a really good article that talked about how I forgot who the person was who listed like what he sees are the 12 most important positions in football to have on your team. Do you remember who made the list of the prospects, or I'm sorry, the positions?
Oh, I don't. Yeah, I remember doing it, but I can't remember who was. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I know I had the first few I agreed with, and then from there on, I did not agree.
It was
like, you know, wide receiver today is devalued. I mean, perimeter receivers. Slot receivers are way up. Okay, guys who can win from the slot are way up. Perimeter receivers are way down. I mean, it's great. It's a luxury to have a guy out there. But versatility at the receiver position, and I would argue the tight end, a tight end one today is more important than a wide receiver one. I mean, if it's just a wide receiver on the perimeter.
I think that's the key point. The traditional one trick pony of go deep and make big catch is devalued compared to what it was, because I think that the wide receiver who is able to do it all is as valuable as any position in the league. And we're starting to see that with Cooper Kupp getting the big contract he got, Tariq Hill having the big contract that he has. Tariq Hill has changed the way that I've thought about the wide receiver position in the NFL, and I've talked about that before. But back to that point, like you listed out 12 positions or 13 positions, and the Cardinals had like four or five that you could definitively say, yes, we have these things going into next season. And they're not going to be able to meaningfully address all eight in the draft alone. So I think just the positions that they end up signing to fill, I think will be more interesting than the players and the dollar values they sign themselves. Because if Monty's already telling you for the second year in a row to temper expectations a little bit in some of the messaging, then I think what'll be more interesting is the positions they fill. Because we might walk out of free agency in the draft and see of the 12 key positions, eight of them are filled. Nine of them we feel are filled, but not every position is going to get filled. And I think that's just the lack of quality players that are available, as well as the Cardinals are not really big game hunting in free agency. And so I think the thing to pay more attention to is the positions that they choose to fill in free agency, whether it's a left guard, right tackle, number one outside corner, slot, traditional slot corner like a Kenny Moore, maybe interior linebacker, interior defensive line. Just it'll be interesting to see the positions they choose to fill in free agency.
Right. So the two examples you made for wide receiver prove the point that today's wide receivers who are the go-to guys are slot guys, because both Hill and Kupp win regularly from the slot. That's their bread and butter. You know, and so they're and you can line them up wide too and have them isolated one-on-one on receivers, which both teams do with those guys in the red zone, like very effectively. So like Brady would do with Gronk in the red zone is flex Gronk out wide at times to put him on one-on-one on a linebacker. So to, you know, that's, you know, keep them in the slot going from, you know, getting down to the red zone and then put them on outside one-on-one. Very difficult on defenses. So, I mean, the game is changing. I keep saying people are like the safety position is not a premier position. Oh, no. You're making a huge mistake. That's why in Seattle they want to replace their safeties. I mean, again, winning in the middle of the field is paramount. That's where Brady thrived, and that's where Mahomes is thriving. And, you know, this is what wins football games, when you can beat people in the middle of the field. And the safeties have everything to do with defending the middle of the field. Some of them in slot corners, but in zones, also in making the plays over the middle, breaking up passes. You know, one of the things that Buddha does great at the back end, he's not great in deep coverage, but boy, oh boy, does he make people hear footsteps when you try, you know, he takes the romance out of the crossing pass over the middle. And that's what you want from a safety there. Safety is a premier position because oftentimes these safeties like Brian Branch are covering your best wide receiver too. They're that athletic.
Well, and, in the case of the Lions, that was definitely out of necessity because the Lions, that cornerback room was trash last year. Ooh, it was bad. So I understand that point. And it's why I also think that the Cardinals need to upgrade the off-ball linebacker position, which brings us back to the conversation about Zaven Collins, which I don't want to have today, but it's the same point going into free agency that it was a month ago.
Right. Well, we don't have to have it because Monty Gannon confirmed, or was it Monty, that Collins is staying put. So, and I just don't get it. And he said we're going to keep evaluating him for the fifth year option. No way that's happening.
Yeah. So,
they're not. Plus, if you wanted to give them the option, is it's would be much less for an inside linebacker than it is for an outside edge. So, but they're just not going to do it no matter what. And so one thing I just wanted to end on is giving props to the Phoenix crew for being in the at the combine. It was so cool to see them there. For they were there last year too. Johnny Venerable, you know, to see how his journalism career is skyrocketing. You know, he was here with us on the Wrench the Birds podcast with Blake Murphy, and then writing for us for a while there. He's a good writer as well. And it's just great to see him. And Bo Brock, who I think he brought with him to Phoenix, you know, the two of them together have quite a chemistry and create quite a buzz. I love to challenge them from time to time on things, assertions that they make that I think are maybe a bit moot. But I have to give them credit for the interview they gave with Jonathan Gannon. I think it was, they really got, you know, we got to see a really nice personal side of Gannon that hasn't really come through in other interviews. Of course, they had 20 minutes with him, and the banter was fun. And, you know, Gannon is very engaging guy, and, you know, and he's got personal skills, and he listens. And I think that's one of the reasons why he got a good grade, was the criteria was listening to players. Well, he was listening to Johnny and Bo and reacting and responding. And I think we saw some personal strengths there of Gannon in that interview that I was very encouraged by. And I just don't, I want to give kudos to them. But I also want to just say that, you know, and I got to devote a whole podcast to this, where it just seems to me like Gannon's like the cat who stole the canary, is somehow coming out of this, like looking like some, you know, like he's like a brilliant hire. And I got to go back to, and I hope that's the case. Don't get me wrong. And I hope that he's learned some valuable lessons about integrity and honesty over this past year, because, you know, I'm watching Jason Kelsey retire. And did you see that, Kyle? Did you see the press conference?
I did not watch the full 50-minute press conference, but I did see the highlights of him crying and cursing, and Travis crying in the front row and things like that.
Yeah, you know, and so, but one of the things he first started crying about, to the point of having to pause and gather himself, was the heartbreak he still feels for losing to the Chiefs in last year's Super Bowl. How it still just haunts him and devastates him. And I'm watching him there, and this is one of the most special players in NFL history in my mind. This guy reinvented the center position. I mean, he was like a fifth-round draft pick or something.
Sixth.
I mean, who came in and just took this bull by the horns, and boy, oh boy, was he special. You know, he's done a lot for that position, and just his he's a special, put it this way, he's a special presence. And I couldn't help, and I have to be honest, I couldn't help that whole time thinking, how could any coach on that Eagles team with 2 weeks to prepare for the Chiefs be in the presence of this kind of greatness and passion and desire to win and not give all, you know, 200% for 2 weeks without distraction, you know? And it just makes me nervous that Gannon's would do that to that team in that situation. And You know, I'm just not as quick as some of you to just say, oh, no, big deal. It is a big, because if it happens to you, would it be a big deal? Frick yeah. I mean, we all got upset that Russ Grimm was caught eating a hot dog watching Springsteen at the halftime of our only Super Bowl game. I mean, we're pissed. And we had right to be. What the frick is he doing? And we ended up losing that second half, you know, losing the game. You know, I mean, you know, it's choices that people make, and not everyone's perfect. And we get the allure of, hey, wow, this is an NFL head coaching job, and wow, I'd love the attention. But there's a time and place for everything. And if you're sitting there as a defensive coordinator getting ready for Patrick Mahomes, and you also have a guy, Vic Fangio, at your disposal, you know, wouldn't you spend the whole 2 weeks preparing for the game of their lives? Not only for yourself, but for the sake of those players. And so, you know, I couldn't help but feel that. And I, you know, that's why I think, you know, hopefully, you know, Gannon said, I want to press, you know, go back to square one. I hope for him and his sake that he's learned valuable lessons from that. And also that, you know, some of the things and decisions that he made this year, you know, right now he's getting a pass for, but if those continue, it's going to get worse for him and worse for the team. And I, like I said, I'll go into that in depth on that at some point in a different email, in a different, excuse me, Red Rain or article. But I'm hoping that, you know, I saw the good in Gannon in that interview, and I super kudos to Johnny and Bo. They brought the good out in him. I mean, I think he is a genuinely good, soul who wants to connect with people. But there just seems to be at times a level of manipulation that makes me a little uncomfortable. And I hope that I'm maybe misinterpreting, but, you know, hopefully, but I can't misinterpret someone not giving his all to his team during Super Bowl preparation and then turning around and lying about it. And then costing the Cardinals a third round draft pick because of it and making the Cardinals once again look absolutely ridiculously foolish.
And costing Vic Fangio a job because Vic Fangio was right. The person they wanted to hire, but he wasn't really the Jeremy Fowler story talked about. He wasn't really up front with the Eagles about him searching for a job.
Right. I mean, if you compromise on integrity, you don't have a chance. I mean, not only does, you know, if you compromise integrity, it's not going to build cultures. And secondly is that, you know, in the football world, if you believe as I do, there are football gods. Seriously. I mean, they're not going to reward, you know, guys who try to cut corners. They just don't.
Well, the football gods were especially cruel to them because it absolutely fell apart last year for the Eagles defense after Gannon left. So that was an especially cruel awakening.
Yeah, it did. But I think that whole team was classic victim of fatigue. I mean, to play that high, that well for that long in the NFL, now that it's 17-game season, now they're pushing for 18 games. I mean, there's a physical wall. I mean, the Chiefs didn't play that great this year, but they gathered strength down towards the end. And of course, when you have Mahomes and Kelce, you know, and you have one of the things the Chiefs did, which I'd love to see the Cardinals do, is rebuild that defense with youngins and play them and stick with them. And I think this is going to be the new rage, is that you can actually win a Super Bowl playing, you know, like 10 starters who were on rookie contracts and one stud in the middle like Chris Jones. I mean, that model that Steve Spagnuolo put out there, who, by the way, the 49ers tried to poach him away from the Chiefs. I don't know. Did you hear that, Kyle?
I did see that. They called everyone in the books and nobody wanted their DC job.
Yeah. So, you know, but the Chiefs turned around and gave Spags a $5 million plus contract extension. So he's there to stay, and what a job. But you get the right defensive guys in there with young players who are hungry and have the energy. It's probably a better formula these days than a veteran defense like the Eagles had, who were not made to last physically to play on that high a level for 45 straight games. I mean, it's just really, really hard to do at, you know, with veterans. You know, you're easier to do with younger players. So, yeah, I mean, I just hope that, you know, this is where I'm in such odds with my own favorite team, is like the lack of integrity, the lack of honesty, the deception, and sort of like feeling like we're being run like a CIA covert ops team, really sticks in my craw. And I have to be honest with myself and express those things, because otherwise, you know, I don't know if it'll ever change, or I worry that it won't change. And that's the caveat I just needed to say, because and again, I see the good in Gannon, and I think as a communicator he's got really good skills. The question is, does he have the follow through and, you know, and the integrity to, you know, treat everything fairly, which I don't feel he did with a number of players that he favored coming in. So hopefully that'll be something that gets fixed. But, you know, and we'll talk about the football gods. Why do they love Mahomes so much? The dude is just such a hustler.
Well, because he's the best. He's the absolute best.
Well, but he also, he wears the badge well, you know? I mean, he's more lovable than Brady. He really is.
I know, I mean, I love him, and I used to hate Brady, so I would agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, Brady was pestilent, you know, ornery, and but it was
hard to separate that from the Patriot way. It was only when Brady found his voice after 15 years that he became more likable.
Right. Yeah. Good point. So, but that's a fascinating thing with me. I got to do a whole thing on the football gods, because you know, there's just so much to it, and you know, I think it's, plus they all reside on Mount Lombardi in the sky, and yeah, it's a real thing. It really is. It's got to be, because you know, some of the things that happen are just, you know, obviously inspired by the football gods. And we'll talk about that someday. I want Kyle to wrap his head around it, because he's such a great historian. I mean, you know, that's something he could add to, like, brilliantly. And but thanks for listening in. And yeah, have a wonderful week at the start of free agency. This time next week, we'll maybe have some news. And, you know, in the interim, oh man, will we ever see confetti at State Farm again? But when we do, may the red rain fall down on you into our red, red sea. Red rain.